Up to this point, we've only used a text box, a text block, and a button control. However, as you've undoubtedly seen when working with Windows applications, web applications, or even other phone applications, there are other types of input controls that are used to allow the user to input different types of information or to restrict what they can enter into the application. And so in this video, what I want to do is take a look at the toolbox, look at some of the other controls that are available to us, and then also a little bit later in this video, look at how to retrieve the values of those other controls using C#. Also, I'm going to be typing their values by hand into the XAML code pane. So this technique will serve us well once we get near the end of this lesson, because we're going to do something that would be almost impossible to do, or at least very difficult to do reliably using only the XAML designer pane that we've been using up to this point. Also, I'm going to fade out and fade back in so you don't have to watch me typing type long passages of code, but I'll explain everything that I do after I've finished typing it. All right, so first of all, you can see that I have in Visual Studio a new project called Input Controls. And as you can see, I've done nothing to it just yet. What I want to do is start this application by defining some rows and columns in our content grid down here. So I'm going to make some space here, and I'm going to start creating two sections, a grid.rowDefinitions. So here we go, grid.rowDefinitions, and then also a grid.columnDefinition section. And then I'll just start typing in here. All right, so as you can see, what I've done is created a series of row definitions and column definitions for our content panel, this grid that we're going to use to lay out the controls for our example. Also, I think it bears pointing out that I've reduced the size, the zoom level rather, of the designer pane, so I can still see what happens as a result of my choices here, but it doesn't take up a lot of space. I could even reduce that a little bit further if I wanted to. All right, so I've created 7 rows. Each row will be no less than 75 pixels tall, and then I've used an asterisk character after each one, which means, again, if there's any extra space, then go ahead and divvy it up evenly amongst all 7 of these rows. And then I've created 3 columns. The leftmost column is 160 pixels at the very least, and that's going to be used for a label at some point. If I were to extend this application, I would probably just put a simple text block in here to describe what the field on the right hand side would contain. Then I use a little spacer column that's only 10 pixels wide, and then finally I use a 250 pixel wide column for the right hand side, where I'll do most of the work in putting my other controls. Alright, so now I'm going to start placing input controls into each of the cells that I've defined. So first of all, I'm going to create a text box, which we've used many times in the lessons up to now. So this will simply serve as a review. Okay, so again, we've created text boxes many times up to this point. The text box allows the user to type in values using the input scope, or rather the on-screen keyboard. And we've already used its text changed event to react to each modification on the input keyboard. So every time the user were to type in a new keystroke, that text change event would fire off. We've also used the text property for retrieving the entire string of characters that we typed into the text box. We've used its focus method to make it the active control as the application loads up. I believe many of the controls that we'll cover support this focus method as well. So we've already covered this. I want to move on to the next control, which is very similar, and that is the password box. You'll see how similar it is right after we type it in here. Admittedly, the password box has limited utility, but it's great for those situations where you want to allow the user to type in values that can't be seen by prying eyes looking over the shoulder of the user. Its declaration is almost identical to that of the text box. There are two subtle differences. First of all, there's a password changed event available, as opposed to the text changed event in our text box. Secondly, to retrieve the value typed in by the user, as we'll see in just a little bit, we'll use the password property, not the text property. Also, I failed to point this out on the first example. Notice again, we've looked at this previously, but I'm setting the grid.column and grid.row to position each of the controls into a different cell of our grid. All right, so let's move on now and let's take a look at another control. Suppose we need a simple yes or no answer from the user. We could allow them to type in yes or no into a text box, but there's a better control that will limit the entry by the user to just true or false, yes or no, 0 or 1, and that is the checkbox. There are several interesting things about this entry. First of all, notice that the checkbox has a content property, which is what's displayed to the right of the checkbox itself. In this case, I simply set it to the word, to the question, "Are you sure?" Just to demonstrate something else. Are you sure you want to do this? All right, that's better. And I'll explain why that's better in just a moment. Secondly, there's a checked event that we can handle, as you see here. So whenever the user taps the checkbox to turn it true or false, it'll fire off an event. As we're going to see later in this lesson, we can use the isChecked property to determine whether the user has checked the checkbox or not. The isChecked property can be set at design time, and we can make that the default. We'll see how to do this in just a moment when we work with the radio button. But this example also demonstrates how to span a single control across multiple columns using the column span property. I wanted to allow the content area plenty of room to breathe because I knew it was going to span, it was going to be a long question. Are you sure you want to do this? So I decided to span the checkbox control across all three columns. All right, so we looked at the checkbox. Similarly, if there are a limited set of options available and only one can be selected, then we would use a series of radio button controls. So let's build that. Okay, so first of all, each radio button is independent. However, if you'll take a look here, there is a group name property that I set to my group on both of the radio buttons. And this is the property that keeps these two radio buttons collected together so that they work as a team. In other words, when one radio button is selected, any other radio button control that is within the same group name is deselected automatically when the user selects one. So as you can see, I set the default selection using the isChecked property to true on the first radio button that selects male. This is optional, but it's a good visual reminder to the user of what the intent of this is. Select one of these. Make sure you click one of them. If this isn't the right one, click the other one. And so I didn't demonstrate this, but the radio button supports a checked and unchecked event, just like the checkbox did previously, so that when somebody clicks one or the other checkbox in this example, it would fire off that event. The other thing that you want to keep in mind is that when we go to retrieve the value, we're going to have to be a little bit creative about finding out which of the radio buttons has been selected. And I'll demonstrate a very simple way to determine that in a few moments when we get to that portion where we're writing C sharp code again. All right, let's move on. Finally, if we need to display a number of options in a list and we want to allow the user to select one or more values from that list at the same time, then we would use a list box. And a list box is a little bit more complicated than these other controls because a list box will contain other controls inside of it, list box item controls. So let me go ahead and get started with that. All right, let me start off by saying that later in this series, we're going to see how we can more fully utilize the list box to display templated data, not just simple list of strings. This will serve as a nice introduction at this moment. Notice that between the opening and closing list box tag, there are a series of 8 list box items. Each list box item has a content property that I'm just setting to a simple string. I've intentionally added 8 list box items so you can run the application and see how it behaves. Let's do that right now. So as you can see here at the bottom, not all of the list box items are displayed. I can use my mouse cursor to simulate the user's finger as they hold down and move to see additional options available, and move it to see now the options at the very top that are available. Let's go ahead and stop for the moment. Rounding out our discussion of the list box, in a similar fashion to the radio button controls, you can monitor a change between options through an event handler, such as the selection changed event that's registered here. Okay, so I'm almost finished designing the user interface for my application. It's at this point that I've run into a little bit of a problem. I need to add a button control to the very bottom of this form. I need to, however, figure out a way to accomplish this because, as you can see, I've run out of space vertically. So I need some way to allow the user to scroll down so that he can see the rest of my application. Now, luckily, there's an easy way to retrofit this functionality through the use of a scroll view control. The scroll viewer creates a little window to the information that it contains within it. Now, if I create one to take up a height of 500 in height, I could have 1,000 in height worth of content inside of it. I'm just displaying only half of it at a time. So then the user would be able to scroll down the application using his finger to push the viewable area up or down. So let me do this. I'm going to go up here before our definition for the content panel and make some space for myself. And then I'm going to add a scroll viewer. Once I've finished defining the scroll viewer, I want to take the ending tag. I'm just going to hold down the shift key on my keyboard, and then I'll hit the end key on my keyboard to make sure that final tag is selected. I'm going to hit the control X key on my keyboard to cut that ending tag, and I'm going to go all the way to the bottom of this. And then paste it in. Let's make sure I get the right grid here. I'll paste it in right here. So I essentially wrapped a scroll viewer tag around the content grid. So as you can see, I have a margin set of 175 from the top, which would give us the sufficient room to start it beneath the text blocks that come by default on my XAML page. Also, the scroll viewer will be 500 pixels tall, so that should give us plenty of room here. As you can see, when I select into it, I have a little more room at the bottom, but I'm going to leave that for now. And you can see the bottom part of my scroll viewer ends just a little bit before the bottom area. This would allow me to add an app bar. My goal here is still to add an additional button control, so I'm going to need to make another one more row. So I'm just going to copy and paste one of the existing rows into the grid row definition collection. And then finally, I'm going to scroll down below the list box and add the definition for my button control and make sure to set its grid and its grid.row and grid.column property appropriately so the button is at the very bottom. All right, I'm going to save my work and I'm going to run it just to see how this works. All right, so as you can see, my options are cut off here. I can't see the end of the list box, nor can I see the OK button. But I'm just clicking on an empty area here and just moving my mouse cursor up and holding down, and you can see now I can see the OK button. And I can move back up to the top and move back up to down to the bottom. All right, so the scroll viewer really comes in handy when you want to have additional information that won't fit on the screen. So let's talk about why I wanted to type in this entire passage as opposed to going to the toolbox and dragging and dropping. Well, first of all, it allowed me to be a little bit more precise with how I place things into the appropriate column and row without having to refill format everything in either the properties window or in the code itself. Also, I wanted to make sure that I completely understood the properties that are available to me for each of the controls. The other thing that I could have done was just select this entire content panel on the interface. Let's just say I was able to select it all, use Control X on my keyboard to cut it, then drag and drop a scroll viewer onto my designer, and then paste my grid back into it. I could have done that, however, through experience, I just don't trust myself to keep important information on the Windows clipboard. If I thoughtlessly copied something else to the clipboard, then I would eliminate the entire content grid and all of its contents from memory. I could probably go through a series of undos on the keyboard, Control Z, Control Z, Control Z, but my preference is just to add the opening and closing tag into the XAML code pane rather than have all the drama play out as I just described. It's sometimes just easier to go in and edit the code rather than working with the peculiarities of the designer and selections and things of that nature. All right, for the sake of completeness, let's talk about the button. We've used it since the very start. So as a review, the button simply allows a user to indicate that he wants to perform some sort of action within the application. So we can set properties while designing the application, like the appearance, the content of the button, for example. But we really rely on it to provide the click event that we can write code to handle. So before I conclude, what I want to do is right-click the click event and then select Navigate to Event Handler. And what I want to do here is start retrieving the values of each of the controls that we added. And this will give us the ability to talk about the other properties that I merely described earlier in this video. So for example, string text box value equals my text box dot text. Easy enough, right? We've done that a number of times throughout this series of videos. How about the password box that we created? Let's create password box value equals my password box dot. And here we don't use the text property, we use the password property to retrieve the value. Now, once it's retrieved, it will save it into our variable as clear text, text that we could read. All right, similarly, let's move on to the checkbox. Now, this is going to return either a true or a false, but let's take a look at the my checkbox just briefly here, and we already said that it uses an isChecked value. If you look at the little helper window to the right, notice that it has a bool and a question mark. That is the data type. There's two things about this that we need to talk about. First of all, bool is a true or false value. It is a 0 or a 1. And the question mark after it means that it can be null. So this is a little bit of an not advanced topic, but it's something that trips people up. Null means that the value is indeterminate. It's not true or false. It's unknown. So the question mark can be applied to any of the data types that we've used so far. We could use an int with a question mark, for example, which means it's not zero. It's just an unknown value. So in the past, some people have mistaken the value of null with zero, and those are just simply two different values. And we want to make sure to understand that as we get started. So to retrieve the value, I'm going to have to declare it the same as whatever the isChecked property is going to return. In this case, the bool with the question mark. So here, checkbox value equals isChecked. Okay, great. Let's move on to the radio button. I kind of gave you a preview of this when we were talking about it. We're going to have to get creative with how we retrieve the value because the value could be in one place or another. So there's a number of different ways to accomplish this. I'm going to take a very simple approach, but please understand that you might see other techniques when you're looking at other people's code. All right, so in this case, ultimately what I want to do is populate this radio button value. I want it to be a string because maybe that's the way I'm saving it in the database. Maybe that's the way that I'm representing it to the user on a separate screen. But at any rate, I want to save the value of the radio button, depending on which one was selected, as either male or female. To accomplish that, I'm going to do a simple if statement to check the isCheck property on the first radio button. In this case, if it's true, then we'll set the radio button value to male. Otherwise, we'll set it to female. We could have additional else if statements to retrieve the value from additional radio buttons if we were to have some, or we could use a switch statement just as easily. Finally, the list box requires even a little bit more effort. So let me do this. All right, first of all, I want to emphasize that there's a number of different ways to retrieve the value from the list box. Also, I want to emphasize that in this particular case, we're only allowing a single selection. So just be aware of the fact that there is a selected items collection that would allow us to retrieve multiple selections from the user. In this case, we're going to keep it simple and only allow a single selection. But notice that selected item returns an object. If you recall from an earlier video today, we had a similar scenario where the sender object would tell us which control was the control that fired off the event in the event handler. This is similar in so much that it's going to return a single object in the items collection of my list box. So it puts the onus on me to cast that object into type list box item. And once it's of type list box item, then I can retrieve the content value of the list box item. Now the content value itself is also an object. So I'm going to have to cast that to a string in order to retrieve the value that was displayed on screen to the user in my string list box value variable. And then finally, we would do something here like save this data onto the phone or send this data over the internet to a centralized server that would store this data in a database, or perhaps there are other scenarios or other reasons why we would collect this kind of information from a user. But at this point, we have a pretty good overview of the major input controls that are available to us within Silverlight for the Windows Phone 7. At this point now, we should be able to build some pretty robust applications that at the very least allow data entry from our user. All right, so that wraps up day two. Long day. If you got this far, I congratulate you. You're doing awesome. Be sure to attempt the exercise for day two, the homework assignment that I'm going to give you in the next lesson. Try to do it on your own. Try not to peek at the solution, although I will provide the solution for the exercise so that if you do get stuck, you can at least get unstuck enough so that you can move on. It's going to cover some of the concepts that we've discussed on day two, as well as some that we've discussed on day one. So this is a great opportunity to get your hands dirty and to force yourself to struggle with the code with your own mind and your own hands. And we'll see you in the next lesson. Thank you.